Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. DNA told the truth about Joseph D'Angelo and his crimes. There was DNA evidence captured from those crimes in the 70s and 80s, though it took 40 years for the techniques and technology and the right people to put the puzzle together. Dr. Barbara Ray Venter is the genetic genealogist originally from New Zealand who provided the leads to law enforcement, helped instruct them in the techniques that led to solving some of these Golden State Killer crimes, and she's joining us by phone. Dr. Ray Venter, thanks for joining us on Insight.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me.
Would you tell me about your perspective in hearing and watching what unfolded yesterday?
It was emotionally exhausting. Even though I was obviously very familiar with the cases, just hearing them hour after hour, seeing all the victims and seeing the anguish on their faces, it makes it even more important what we've been able to do in terms of taking this man from being just a suspect to now being a convicted killer and rapist. So I'm hoping that for the victims, yesterday was a special day, as Anne-Marie Schubert put it. It is just absolutely incredible listening to the ghastly stories of his crimes. So I am just so pleased that I was able to do something to put him away.
Would you tell the story from 2018? And I do want to set the stage by saying that you were not a genealogy expert going into this, that like so many people, you had jumped in and offered to help a family member, and that was your first exposure. But what happened related to Joseph D'Angelo?
Actually, it was not my first exposure. I was recruited by Paul Holes because I had solved two other very difficult cases. So I got a phone call from Paul Holes when he learned that I had solved this one particular case of a woman who had been abducted as an infant. And he then approached me and asked if I thought I could do the same thing for one of his cold cases.
Well, I think the history I was getting to was even back further when you were trying to help a newfound cousin and took a class in searching out genetics. And then I think you ended up teaching the class, didn't you?
I helped teach the, yeah, so this is the online classes that are offered by DNAadoption.org. Yes, but that's sort of, The key to getting into doing the forensic cases was after I had taken that class and then been contacted. Actually, as being a member of DNAadoption.org, we were contacted by the San Bernardino Sheriff's Department to inquire about using the technique that we use for adoptees to use it in a criminal case.
So Paul Holes is a name that we originally or early on heard. Do I understand that you didn't want your name released initially? And if so, why not?
That's correct. I had asked to remain anonymous to the press. It was okay to tell other law enforcement people who had done the case, but I wanted to not have my name mentioned in the press, mainly because I was the first person doing this. And so the detectives that I was working with were concerned for my safety and that, as one of them put it, there are all kinds of wingnuts out there who've left their DNA where they shouldn't, and they will now know that you could probably identify them. And so it was suggested that while I was the lone person out there, that it would probably be good if I remained anonymous. And then, of course, after other people started getting into the field, who were actually much more in the public eye than I was, it was felt that it was unsafe for me to actually, as it were, come out of the closet and be acknowledged as a person who actually worked on the Golden State Killer case.
So I don't know if there are misunderstandings about DNA and solving cases, but how much of a case is it? And how simple or not is it to use?
To use DNA? Well, it really depends on the case. It really varies a lot. So when we very first started working on the Golden State Killer case, the initial matches, so this is people who share DNA with our crime scene DNA, they were very, very distant relatives. So you use the amount of matching DNA. So the more matching DNA you have, then the more closely related you are. And so we started out with somebody who was maybe a fourth cousin. So a fourth cousin, you're sharing great, 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 great grandparents. What you really want to see when you're working on these cases is at least a second cousin, so people that you're sharing great-grandparents with, because then you have fewer people that you need to be looking at in terms of trying to figure out who is the person that you're looking for. Because what you're doing is, so you identify, let's say you've got a second cousin match, you then identify amongst the matches that you have, is there a common set of great-grandparents amongst those matches? Because all these people have matching DNA, you know that the person you're looking for is a descendant of that common pair of great-grandparents. And so at that point, what you do is you build a reverse tree. And so now you build down to the time period when you believe the person that you're looking for was born. So in the case of the Golden State Killer, we knew that the rapes, at least we thought that the rapes probably started around 1976, so we're looking for somebody who's probably born in 1956 or earlier. We know that they were in Northern California. The chances are the person lives in Northern California. And so you then build that down, and you know that you're looking for somebody who is a second cousin to your match. So once you've built out your tree and you're pretty sure you've got all the descendants in there, you then just go through all of those second cousins and say, okay, who was born in 1956 or earlier? Who lived in Northern California? And at that point, we actually came up with a list of 9 men. And then from there, what we did is we actually did what we call consensual or target testing, where we approached somebody we thought might be a close relative, and asked that person if they would be willing to do DNA testing, and they said they would. And we actually just really lucked out. This person turned out, in fact, to be a second cousin. And not only that, she had an X chromosome match. And men only have one X chromosome that they inherited from their mothers. So we suddenly knew that we were now, this particular person was related on the maternal side of the Golden State Killer. And using that information, I could then eliminate some of the men on our list. And so we then ended up with a list of 6 men who could possibly have the maternal line matching. And at that point, I had also looked at, there was this website we use is GEDmatch. And on that site, there was a tool where you could actually look at eye color based on the DNA. And so according to that, our suspect had blue eyes. And so what we did is we then had the FBI then pulled the California DMV records for the 6 men on our list. Only one had blue eyes, and that was Joseph DeAngelo.
Wow.
So it's really kind of a circling technique, I guess. You go through and you pull in as much information as you can, and then you look at what else you have that you can possibly use to figure out which is the needle in the haystack.
I am thinking about that moment, trying to imagine you in that moment when you realize you've found the match. How was that?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was actually 3:00 in the morning. We had just gotten the results back. So this is when we're looking at the fact that we've only got 6 men left. I didn't get then, it was several days after that we then got the information from the DMV records. It's a very good feeling. You've been working so hard for so long, because we were working, I think it took us 63 days from when we first uploaded the files to GEDmatch. And we were working, you know, basically around the clock, all six of us. So it's a lot of hard work. And so you know what it's like when you've, you know, been studying hard for exams, or there's something that you've been really working hard on, and then suddenly it's finished. And there's, you know, you've been just running on adrenaline all that time to finally get there. Because we also had a little bit of pressure in that Paul Holtz was retiring. Yeah. And we were trying very hard to try and solve the case before he retired. I think we missed by something like 3 days. but we also had a little bit of extra push to try and do something as soon as we could. But, yeah, it is. It's a real high. When you're looking at this and you're knowing that this is probably the right guy.
Could I ask how many cases you're involved in now or have been involved in?
So I have a group that works with me. And so I think we've so far solved around 30 cases. And we're currently working on about another 50.
Well, I know that at this point... there's a lot to be explored. I'm not sure whether you heard the survivor, Margaret Wardlow, say that she would like all police officers, as part of their entry into law enforcement, to provide DNA so that there's a DNA data bank. You know, there are so many different methods and pathways. Do you have an opinion about the role going forward of DNA and law enforcement on all sides, in the investigations and in the law enforcement itself?
Oh, I would love it if everybody would upload, you know, do DNA testing and upload to GEDmatch, upload to Family Tree DNA. Those are the two databases we can use for forensic files. I've heard other people propose that all law enforcement folks and their families should do that. Because even if you just had all of those people doing it, there would probably be enough people in the database to really make matching with the crime scene DNA that we have that much better. Because right now the database does not have the databases do not have a sufficient number of people in there, particularly for non-Caucasians. I mean, right now, of course, we're arresting lots of old white guys. That's because the databases are so full of people who have Caucasian ancestry, not so much from other ethnic groups. And so if you had all of the law enforcement folks doing it, you'd then be getting, of course, much more of a cross-section of society and a lot more diversity in terms of the ethnic background of the folks in the database. That would be huge. Hmm. So, it's a superb idea. But just getting more people into the database also is huge. Because even cases that we've got where the person is not 100% Caucasian, we can often use just the Caucasian portion of their ancestry to get enough matches to identify them.
Dr. Ray Venter, it has been a pleasure to have you with us today. I so appreciate the conversation, and the work is fascinating, but so powerful in light of yesterday's experience. And again, thank you so much for your work and your time.
And I think a big shout out has to go to Anne-Marie Schubert and all of the other district attorneys who managed to put that plea deal together. That is so fabulous. Fabulous for the victims and their families. So thank you for having me.
Thank you again. That is Dr. Barbara Ray Venter, genetic genealogist who helped solve the Golden State Killer case after 40 years. And of course, that happened in 2018, leading to the day yesterday with guilty pleas and I admit from Joseph DeAngelo. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. We do have an uplift. And if you were a fan of American Idol, you probably know singer-songwriter Crystal Bowersox. She's going to join us by phone with a new and beautiful song. I think you'll love it. We'll be right back.